Live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's the Zach Ballinger Show, where we help you find your direction through passion and purpose. My name is Zach Ballinger. I am your host. Thank you guys so much for joining the show today. We've got a special guest. Before we get to that, we are streaming live via YouTube. You can join the show by asking questions into the comment box. We'll make sure to get to them to my guests. You guys can always email me, zach@zachballinger.com. You guys know we're doing this career library where we're trying to make 800 episodes. That's how many careers are out there in North America. Right now, we have our goal at about 80-something episodes. So today will be a brand new addition to that episode, and we have an exciting career. Dr. Kumar, thank you so much for joining the show today.
No problem. It's great to be with you, Zach. Thanks.
So Dr. Kumar, tell us a little bit about your career.
Sure. I'm a neurosurgeon, brain and spine surgeon based here in Atlanta, Georgia, and practice kind of the full range of all things that neurosurgeons do. But I have a special interest in treating folks with brain and spine tumors, and love to speak to folks about it, anybody who might be interested in the career.
Wow. So I guess it's not, you know, you make these jokes, it's not brain surgery. And so I guess I cannot make these jokes since I actually do have a brain surgeon on the show today. So very interesting. What got you into medicine? Talk to me around that.
Sure. Well, I think like the way a lot of folks find their way into medicine, they have family members or other people who are in the career. And in my case, both my parents were physicians. They're not surgeons. They were my dad's a cardiologist and my mom is an oncologist. And, you know, I was introduced to the field that way and seeing what they did on a day-to-day basis. And I think initially as kind of the rebellious parts of the teenage years set in, I said, no, there's no way I'm going to do that. I want to do something else. And I tried to strike out on my own. But I kept coming back to it as somebody who was interested in science and really had an endless fascination for the way the human body works. And then the experience that really once and for all kind of turned me in that direction was my grandmother, when I was very young, unfortunately got diagnosed with a brain tumor and ultimately passed away from that. But I saw, you know, the sort of care that the physicians had in taking care of her. And I was really, really inspired by that and fascinated by what they were able to do for her. I kind of never looked back after that. So I think it started with kind of that personal vested interest in it.
You know, I do have a lot of students out there that are listening that are trying to get into med school or maybe going the PA route or taking their MCAT test. What would your advice be to, you know, you kind of found your way because you're obviously fellowship trained. So a lot of people ask me, they're like, Zach, how will I know what kind of medicine I want to do once I get done with residency or what kind of fellowship will I want to do? Talk to us about those students that haven't really been through medical school and residency, and they don't really understand how that works.
I think that's such a great question. And I think it's particularly relevant now because I see a lot of folks either in talking to a lot of people who are interested in going into medicine or seeing people talking on social media, et cetera, who feel the need to say, you know, this is who I am. I'm early on in my training or in college, but I know that I want to do this one thing, be it a neurosurgeon or radiologist or a particular kind of PA, a particular kind of nurse practitioner. And I'll be very honest with you. I think it is great to have that kind of ambition. But a lot of these decisions, and I think the understanding it takes to come to a decision that that's what you want to do, you really develop when you're in the midst of it. So when you're in later on in college or when you're in medical school and you are understanding what it's like to see folks who have these sorts of conditions, to work with the people that you're going to work with, to do the things you have to do day to day, you have, I think, a very peripheral and nice understanding of that in some cases before you head into the subspecialized medical training. But in my experience, I think it's enough to say, look, I know I love science. I know I love seeing patients and helping them out. And I want to apply myself fully to that in general. And it's totally okay to have that fire, have that desire to do that, and figure out as you get a little more into the weeds, what's the specific thing that you like to do. And I think a lot of people are afraid of getting behind and saying, oh, if I don't know way up front, how am I ever going to figure this out? I think it will definitely come to you and things will stand out when you have the right desire and the right footing.
I agree with you. You know, I've talked to so many different students who have been trying to get into medical school, and they talk to me about it and they've already got this figured out. I'll give you an example. My sister, she actually wanted to be a pediatric oncologist, and she's a resident right now at the University of Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
But that quickly changed because she said, I don't know if I can deal with that. And so now it's a pediatric cardiology, not that much, you know, different from the body's perspective. But I've also met students who said, hey, I want to be a dermatologist. And I'm like, well, you know, you do rotations. And then they got in and they're like, well, that's pretty boring. I want to be in the action. I want to be in pulmonology. I want to do a critical care. And so I think you're right. You have to go through the experience in medical school, and residency does a great job of exposing you to different fields. You know, you rotate through all them, so you kind of get the hang of it there. It's a very unique experience. What do you love about your job?
I would say several different things. So the first thing is, as a surgeon and as anybody who's thinking about going into surgery, you have to love being in the operating room. I think that is, it's my favorite place in the world to spend time. And, if you find that you're the kind of person who the hours kind of melt away when you're in there doing the things that you want to do, that's far and away the favorite part of my job is, you know, spending time in there working with my hands, solving problems. And then, you know, it goes, I think, without saying that it's tremendously gratifying to be able to have an impact on someone's life. And it almost sounds cliched to say that. And I think when you're going through some of the lower, more difficult points of medical education, studying for the test that you have to study for, trying to hit the goalposts that you have to hit to get there. It is very hard sometimes to see that. But the minute you do make a difference in someone's life, as you know, whether you're a medical student or a PA student, or you know, even somebody who's working in the ER and giving a helping hand to somebody, a clinician that's in there, it really makes it worth it. And it was hard for me personally sometimes to see that light at the end of the tunnel, but I'm thankful that I get to see it many days these days.
Yeah, congratulations on that. You know, it's a daunting task. I've definitely interviewed several medical professionals with their fellowships, and you know, there's always stories of adversity throughout that time. And so, congratulations to you on that. And this is going to be a really dumb question because I think I already know the answer. But you know, what's some of the challenging things about your job?
Yeah, I appreciate the chance to talk about that. I think you know, what I get asked sometimes is, you know, is it challenging to learn this information and learn the diagnoses and the things that you have to do? And the answer is yes, but I think there are many, many jobs that require you to learn a lot of information either before or on the job. And I don't think my job is unique in doing that. So I would say that the difficult part of my job or any job in the medical field is not what's in the textbook. The difficult job is trying to take care of folks in a way that you really feel is best and fighting for them in the context of everything else that's going on. And I'll give you an example. You know, we have many folks who come in who are diagnosed with brain tumors, and we have guidelines according to, you know, what in an ideal situation we should use to treat these patients: surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, what have you. But many times folks don't have either the financial support, the family support, the logistical support, finding rides, things like that to get to where they need to go. trying to fight for them to get the care that we know is possible in the context of all of those things, helping to navigate the system between different doctors, different areas. That's the part of the job that I think day-to-day challenges us the most, to say, well, how can we adjust our knowledge of the science and our knowledge of what we can do for patients with what is the realities facing the individual patient that's in front of us. And that's the thing that I still don't feel that, you know, I'm a master or an expert at. I learn every single day doing that part of the job.
It's amazing, the heart of doctors, because every one of them's had a similar answer that I've asked throughout the gamut of who, you know, the family medicine doctor that I interviewed said the most difficult thing of his job is insurances, obviously, is number one, dealing with them. And then number two, breaking some bad news of a diagnosis that he does not like to break. And so it's got to be some days emotionally taxing, right?
It is. I mean, it definitely is. And, you know, I think that for those of us who choose to go into taking care of patients with cancers or in neurosurgery in general, we see other things like trauma and cases with children, pediatric neurosurgical problems can sometimes be quite affecting on patients' lives. You know, that comes with the territory. And so, you know, folks who do not want to deal with that on a daily basis tend to not want to come into this field. You're absolutely right. It's tough, but it's you see how much patients are willing to fight, and that's very gratifying.
So let's take you back on a time machine, and let's take you to second, third, fourth, fifth grade. What did you dream about as a little kid that you wanted to do career-wise?
Well, the first thing that I can remember wanting to be, I think, is the same as everybody else. I wanted to be an astronaut. So I was very focused on that for a long time. I went to space camp and had all the books and all that sort of thing. And, you know, I could recite all these random facts about planets and, you know, recite different astronomy books I had verbatim. And so I was always interested in that. You know, later on, as I got to high school, I kind of pivoted and I wanted to be a movie director for a while. That was another thing that really captured my interest. And then that's when I mentioned to you, you know, the factors that made me kind of switch and start looking at medicine more as a career again, kind of started to enter my mind end of high school and college.
I would say a movie director would be a hard sell to your parents or two doctors as well. But it is interesting, you know, medicine is a lot about science. So, you know, the reason I asked this question is because I challenged people in my latest book. I said, look back into you when you were a little kid. What did you always dream about doing? And you know what an astronaut does is they study a lot of science. And so it's kind of interesting. You've kind of taken your passion a little bit. You know, I'm not saying that planet is the same thing as a body, but, you know, you do take science and you have to be very good at it. And obviously you were to finish what you did. So I think that's very interesting. Now, I always encourage people to do job shadowing or preceptorships. I think with your line of work, it's essential to do those things. That's what medical school we were talking about. But let's say, because I like to ask this question, somebody spends a week with you, let's say a day. I know it's going to change because there's clinical days or surgery days. But what does a typical day look like? Say they're getting up with Dr. Kumar in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then they leave with him at night. What does that look like?
Sure. So I'll kind of divide it up into my surgery and non-surgery days. So on days that I'm not doing surgery during the week, I'm typically in the clinic or in the hospital, seeing folks who've been referred to me for problems, or seeing folks who are in the hospital who they ask, different doctors have asked me to see for assistance. And so on those days, usually out of the house by around between 7:30 in the morning, we'll start seeing my first patient somewhere between 7:30 and 8 in the morning. And then it's usually pretty continuous. You know, so I see on a typical clinic day, depends on the type of clinic day, but anywhere between 20, 25 patients. And those will be a mixture of folks who I've seen in the past and have operated on. I'm seeing them in follow up, or new patients who have been referred to me. I work with a really great team in my office with nurses and PAs and our support staff who help us to get all these patients seen and taken care of. And I'm usually home on those days, you know, between 5 and 6 p.m. And it's pretty continuous from the morning until the evening. The exception being there are always emergency surgeries that come up or patients of mine that have had issues that need to be urgently addressed. So there are not many neurosurgeons in a typical hospital, so we have to handle a lot of our own issues as they come in. So those patients come straight to me. On operative days, it really usually varies depending on the kinds of surgeries that I have. So my first operations usually start at 7:30 in the morning, so I have to be in the hospital around 45 minutes, 30 to 45 minutes before then to make sure everything is taken care of. And then I'll do anywhere between 1 and 3 operations on a given day. And you know, if it's one operation, that could be a long one, 10, 12, 14, 16 hours if I'm taking out a complex brain tumor. Or if they're shorter operations, they can be anywhere between 45 minutes to 2 hours, and you're doing multiple of them. And I will typically have 2 operative days and 2 clinic days per week, and then one that's kind of a flex day to offload anything else.
Wow. You know, and I think that's, you know, if you're out there listening as a student, you have to realize that medical professionals, particularly MDs, put in a lot of hours. You know, brain surgeons sound kind of cool, and a lot of people think that that's neat, and it very is, but there's a long days with that. And so certainly, you know, like you said, if you get a complex case, you could be in there even longer than your 10, 12, 14 hours. So definitely a long hour days for you. Where can people find you? So, you know, let's say there's a student, let's say even there's a medical school student listening that might be interested in connecting with you. Are you on any social media platforms or anything like that?
I am not personally, but I have a practice website. It's okay. It'll be up shortly. We're still building it, but hopefully within the next week or two, it'll be drvneurosurgery.com. And on there, we'll have plenty of contact information. I love working with students of any kind, any level. And I really, you know, believe that for you to have an understanding of what we do, there's no better substitute to come in to work with me and see what we do. There may be some paperwork we have to have you sign for privacy reasons, but we can take care of that. And would love to, even if it's just to chat on the phone, happy to talk.
And, you know, Dr. Kumar, by the time this episode loads and you guys out there are listening, his website will be live. So you'll be able to go see that. So one more time, could you give us that website out there?
It's drvneurosurgery.com. So just drvneurosurgery.com.
And he's located right in my hometown in Atlanta, Georgia. So, you know, you guys can obviously tell, too, by just that you can tell a lot by somebody in 20 minutes. And so Dr. Kumar is a very, you know, if you have anybody that is going through this in the Atlanta market, or you're looking for a referral, keep his name in mind. Obviously, you can tell that his bedside manner is going to be great for any of your relatives. Just a great, great guy. So, and he's given back his time. I mean, he's in his surgical clothes, giving back his time to be with you to talk about his career. So, thank you so much for that, Dr. Kumar. Now, we did have a few questions that came in. And so we wanted to ask, first, a student asked, how did you know you were good enough to be a surgeon? And are there certain doctors who choose not to do? How do they know? I guess they're asking, at what point do you know you're good enough to be a surgeon?
I guess I'll make the assumption that that means in terms of physical technique and surgical technique. And I hope I'm making a correct assumption there. But I'll say a couple things. The first is that I think that most people can be taught how to operate, meaning that you put a tremendous amount of time during your residency in the operating room, learning these things, learning these techniques. Obviously, it takes focused study and it takes work and practice to do that. But I firmly believe that most people can be taught how to do it. Obviously, there is some physical technique that goes into doing all of that. But in my mind, to do anything well, whether it's a medicine, surgery, or anything else, you know, it takes time and it takes work. And this is no exception. So to answer that question more directly, I knew that it was for me because once I stepped in the operating room, I couldn't imagine myself being anywhere else in the hospital. And I said, you know, this is what I want to do. You know, I understood the commitment that went into it. And I had a realistic idea of that. And I said I was willing to do it. And I really think that, you know, anyone out there that has that desire to do it can make it happen. There's nothing special about my hands or my ability that I think many people don't have.
I think you're selling yourself short, but we will definitely go. You know, I've had actually the opportunity to do preceptorships in surgery, and I think you're exactly right, Dr. Kumar. The doctors that I know, and I unfortunately know a lot of doctors, is they might be not that friendly in clinic, but when they get into surgery, they're like a different person. They kick up the music. They're excited. They get the vibe going. They're happy. They're smiling. I'm like, where did you come from? And so I think you're right. You kind of know that, you know, when you step in that OR and you're like, this is where I want to be. So mm-hmm. I like that answer. The next question is a multifold question, but it's pretty easy. It says, how long is medical school? How long is residency? And how long did it take you to do your neuro fellowship?
Sure. So the training to fully become a neurosurgeon in the United States is undergraduate, typically 4 years, of course, medical school, 4 years. And then neurosurgery residency is a minimum of 7 years after medical school.
Wow.
And then many of us choose to do additional training, fellowship training after that. So I did an additional year in subspecialty fellowship training after my residency. Now, you know, it's school is school. You're done with medical school. And then you start earning because when you're a resident, you are a physician. You have your MD. So you're earning money. It's not like you're paying to go to school. But you know, it's not as not the salary that you'd be making as a fully trained physician. So that's the one caveat. But it's a long road.
And you work a lot of hours, correct?
You do. And that's the case for, you know, many residencies, but sure, particularly in neurosurgery.
Gotcha. Well, Dr. Kumar, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is wonderful. I think this is very inspirational for people out there, especially that are thinking about the medical school route and also another career to go into the career library. We very much appreciate your time and thank you for coming on the show.
That's my pleasure, Zach. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, guys. Till next time, take care, stay safe, and we will see you soon for the next Career Library Edition. Take care.